Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome aboard. It is the Amy Beth Arkwe Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. Hope you had a great weekend as we get revved up for a Monday. And by the way, if you're listening live on Monday, noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. out west, give us a call, 347-857-4505. We'll get to some calls a bit later. Had a fabulous weekend. Started out at the Clearwater Hudson River Festival. Great music tradition that has gone on for, I think, 35, 40 years now. Some legends were there, Judy Collins, Pete Seeger, Mavis Staples, mingled in with emerging voices, environmental, family activities, a beautiful day, beautiful weekend for it. Wrapped up the weekend, a big Father's Day win for the Mets, a walk-off win against the Cubs, so we'll take it any way we can get it. In between, I saw the final of the romantic trilogy starring Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, before midnight. I'll talk about that a bit later. First, though, speaking of the movies, we're going to talk about, as you know, I mentioned this on Friday, Radio Free Albemuth. It is the latest film based on sci-fi master Philip K. Dick's work. The sci-fi master has been, his work has been turned into so many big budget blockbuster movies. You know them: Total Recall, Blade Runner, Minority Report, The Adjustment Bureau. The filmmakers we're talking with today, John Alan Simon, the director, and Elizabeth Carr, the producer, have decided to go the indie route because they really wanted to give this film, and what has been called Dick's most personal novel, more of a personal treatment and a different kind of approach. But there are some challenges with indie filmmaking, as you know, in terms of the budget and getting distribution. They have made the movie, though. The question now is being able to get it into a wide theatrical release. Let's welcome to the show Elizabeth Carter, the producer, and John Alan Simon, the director. Welcome aboard to the show.
Hi.
Thank you so much.
Happy to have you here. So talk to me, John. You decided to go the indie route, which is a tough route, although you have a lot more freedom as a director, as a passion project I know of yours. Tell me about your relationship to this book and Philip K. Dick's work.
Sure. Well, I've really been a lifelong fan of Philip K. Dick. I read him in college and fell in love with kind of the vision of the work, which is humorous and metaphysical and deeply political in many ways and very humanistic. And I was dismayed, like a lot of Philip K. Dick fans, that virtually all of the films adapted from his work took one clever idea, one high-concept notion from the stories or the novels, and then turned them into kind of conventional action-adventure films for the most part. Blade Runner, of course, is a really terrific movie, but it shares little resemblance to the work it's based on, to Android's Dream of Electric Sheep. Possibly the only the film that is closest to a novel is A Scanner Darkly, but it's not really science fiction to any large degree. It's a drug paranoia novel that was turned into an animated film by Richard Linklater pretty successfully. I like the film a lot, but again, it wasn't really the kind of science fiction vision. I used to say that the films that are the closest to Philip K. Dick, the best Philip K. Dick films, are 12 Monkeys in Brazil, both by Terry Gilliam, neither of which is actually based on a Philip K. Dick novel. So this was our goal. It took us 2 years to get the rights, my partner Chip Rosenblum and I. And then I wrote a script that for close to 10 years we really couldn't get financed except with the kind of notes from companies that would have turned it into an action-adventure film. But the new digital technology really allowed us to make this film at an efficient budget and be able to make it in a very authentic way to the voice of the novel. And we've been extremely pleased by the reaction of fans and scholars to the film. And we've been pleased that Variety and other reviews, we've gotten raves and are very encouraged. But it didn't get us the kind of distribution offers we would have liked. The movie was privately financed. And the movie business, like the music business, like the publishing business, is going through a lot of upheaval, so we're looking at an innovative way of getting the movie to fans, which is through Kickstarter.
And we're going to talk about that in a minute. It's interesting that you said it took 10 years for you to get this going. I mean, really, people think of the romance of, oh, it's fun to make a movie, but it really is a lot of work involved and a lot of delays and getting the financing together and the rights. We should also mention that Philip K. Dick didn't live long enough to really see his work turned into the movies, right? He passed away in the early 80s, correct?
He died just as Blade Runner was really being shot. He got to see some of the special effects footage from Blade Runner and was really excited about it. And then he had a massive stroke and died at age 54. But, you know, it's somewhat misleading to say it took 10 years to get it made because it sounds like that's all we did for 10 years. And, of course, that's not true. We also had a big-budget Philip K. Dick project called Flow My Tears, the Policeman Said, which has been set up at various studios with stars attached and directors and lots of other projects that I've worked on my own without my partner Chip Rosenblum, so that you work on the project that seems the closest to going at the time.
Sure.
And sometimes it's been radio free album, but not often. Till we finally found the way of getting it made that we did.
Right. And Elizabeth, how did you get involved in the production?
Well, John and I are partners in life. And I have a theater background and also have produced a lot of theater and have an acting background. And so when we were making the movie, I offered to help Fern Castle cast it. She's a wonderful casting director, a cast monster in many wonderful films. And I just loved casting, was very helpful in that regard. I don't know if we've mentioned the cast yet, but the leads are Catherine Winnick and Alanis Morissette. Shea Whigham plays Phil. He's actually a character in his story. Jonathan Scarf and Hannah Hall and Scott Wilson. And then if you'll notice in the supporting roles, the day players, it's just reads like a who do you want to work with on set? Rosemary Harris and just a lot of great people. But anyway, I got very involved in the casting, and one thing led to another and kept getting more and more involved. And John and the other producers wanted me to continue to work for nothing and do a lot of work. And so they said, how about being a producer? And I said, hey, that sounds
right,
great.
And we dragged her in, as I guess what
that's
Elizabeth
right.
was saying. She's been terrific. I don't know that it's really the natural order of things for a husband to be telling a wife what to do. I think it works better the other way, but we've
right.
had a lot of fun doing it.
I've learned an amazing amount from this group of producers. Besides Chip Rosenblum, Steve Nemeth is another producer, and of course John. And now all I want to do is make movies. But it's hard work. Yeah, I'm hooked. It's like a drug.
And so, in lieu of giving you a regular salary, they gave you a title.
Kickstarter.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that because it is interesting. A lot of people have gone the Kickstarter route to try to get their projects up and running. Your project is already finished, so you're not looking to get it up and running, but you're looking to get enough money to get a major distribution arrangement out of it. So talk about how you got involved in this and what are you hoping to get out of it.
Well, first of all, we have to correct you because it's not a major release. It's really a very modest release. We'll be releasing it probably in one theater in each of 10 markets. So we're raising only $85,000 on Kickstarter, and the average release cost of a studio movie is in the tens of millions of dollars, and even the average release cost of a specialty film through Fox Searchlight or Focus is $3 or $4 or $5 million. So we're at the very modest end of the indie release costs.
You're hoping it's going to lead to other things, though, right? You're hoping that once it gets these, the small release, the modest release, that eventually a bigger, some of the companies you mentioned might decide to take it on, correct? And
What we plan to do is to go out through a traditional company for the digital, for the DVD and the video on demand.
Video, right.
But we're going to do the hard, messy part once again, which is putting it in theaters and doing the publicity and doing the marketing to get the movie seen at a at a fraction of a cost of what a traditional distributor would do, but we think incrementally or exponentially better with really innovative and interesting ways. I come out of a distribution background. I distributed the original Wicker Man, the original version of the Wicker Man and Dennis Hopper's Out of the Blue years and years ago, but it's exactly the kind of release pattern that we're going to be doing with Radio Free Albemuth.
And Kickstarter,
you're really going rogue.
Yeah, we are. Kickstarter has been terrific for what we're going to need to do during the theatrical release, is that ground roots efforts to get people into the theaters, excited about the film, to even know about it. We still get, believe it or not, we still get tweets and messages on Facebook and emails to the website that say, oh my God, Radio Free Albemuth, you're doing this? Where is it? When can I see it? So without a big PR machine, it takes a grassroots effort, and Kickstarter is wonderful for that. People get involved. I think of all of our backers now as surrogates for the movie. They're as excited to see us reach our goal as we are, because if we don't reach it, Kickstarter is all or nothing. If we don't raise the entire amount, we don't get any of it.
You get nothing, right? It's unfortunate.
Right.
But people get invested, I guess, like you said, because people, obviously, there are people that love this novel, love Philip K. Dick, they see it, and they want to get involved, and they feel they get an investment in the whole idea. They want to become part of it, basically, right?
Right, and
exactly.
We're recruiting them to become very actively involved. We intend to kind of use this distribution framework that we're creating as a template to do other pictures, too, not just our own, but other people's movies. It seems like there's an appetite. It may not be a huge appetite, but it's a healthy appetite for movies of intellectual and philosophical substance that are entertaining, that are genre science fiction, but aren't creatures and ray guns and space battles. And nothing against those kinds of movies, but that's not the kind of science fiction that I fell in love with reading it as a kid when I read Heinlein and Bradbury and Robert Sheckley and Robert Silverberg. Seems like a lot of them were named Robert, and Isaac Asimov. And that's the kind of science fiction fan who's really going to love Radio Free Albemuth, in addition to the Philip K. Dick fan.
Yeah, give us a little bit of insight into this movie. As we said, this is considered, I think, by a lot of people his most personal, you know, he puts himself in as a character. Give us a little nutshell about what the film is actually about.
Well, Philip K. Dick, the real man, the author, had this amazing experience of being in touch with what he believed was extraterrestrial intelligence in 1974, in February and March of 74, when he had a series of recurring dreams and visions and voices and images culminating in a pink beam that other people actually saw hit him and give him information about the medical condition of his infant son that turned out to be accurate when he took the kid to the hospital. And Philip K. Dick, you know, some people have speculated that he was crazy or schizophrenic, but his friends who knew him then, who many of whom I've spoken to, none of them feel that way. They don't feel he was any crazier than he ever was or any crazier than most writers are. He served on his condo board, actually, all during this period, which
he
I guess...
He is crazy if he served on his condo board.
Which either way, yes, you could look at it either way. But he spent the rest of his life trying to really understand from a metaphysical and philosophical view what had happened to him. And he wrote a million-word journal about this called The Exegesis that was published last year, in which he takes a very skeptical look and evaluates every possible theory, including the fact that he might be schizophrenic, as an explanation. But he then turned to kind of what's more interesting to me than whether or not he was really in touch with Valis, which is what he called this intelligence for vast, active, living intelligence system, was how he used this experience in his art, in his writing. His first novel was Radio Free Albemuth, and he made himself a character in it. It's an alternate past reality of the 1970s in the novel and the 1980s in the movie, in which a Nixon-like president, President Fremont, is still in office 15 years later, chasing after a shadowy terrorist organization that may or may not exist, compromising civil liberties, when a record store clerk from Berkeley named Nick Brady, played by Jonathan Scarf, has these visions and hears these voices and tells his wife, Catherine Winnick, and his best friend, Philip K. Dick, played by Shea Whigham, about the experiences and tries to understand what had happened, at the same time being drawn into a kind of very exciting political Manchurian candidate kind of conspiracy thriller that undertakes to try to do something about what's happened in the U.S. in this alternate past reality. So, you know, he wrote this in the 70s, and it's just so apropos of our political situation today, the Arab Spring, the Occupy movement, even the Tea Party movement. It's about the rights of the individual versus the supremacy of the state, which is a theme that Dick became passionate about. And he put these concerns into a science fiction framework, and it's funny, and it's philosophically challenging, whether it's aliens or God that's communicating with him, and it's about a religious search. And Dick wrote three more books on this subject before he died, one called Valis, which was kind of a re-evaluation of the subject matter of Radio Free Album, with an entirely different plot, but with the Valis satellite communication, and then a novel called The Divine Invasion, and his final novel, The Transmigration of Timothy Archer. And we're just very excited to have had the chance to make this really thoughtful, exciting, entertaining movie. It's against the background of the music business in Los Angeles in the 1980s, so it's a world that Alanis Morissette fits into really rather well. We're really pleased that she joined our little conspiracy and team of filmmakers to do this. She considers it her first dramatic film part, and we're excited for people.
Curb Your Enthusiasm role that she played.
well, that's television.
I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Oh, got
but,
it. Okay. No, but
it is
funny. Her other role in film was, of course, Dogma,
where she played
God. Where she played God
without any words.
So this is either a step up or a step down to run the music business. I don't know.
The other thing
a very interesting character. I called the character a kind of slacker Joan of Arc, and I love casting. I've directed theater here. Elizabeth and I have done plays together that she's produced and or acted in, and I've directed. And I love actors. I love working with them in casting. So I saw lots and lots of people for all the parts, except for the part of Sylvia. Alanis wanted to meet. We talked, and by the end of the meeting, I thought she was perfect for the part and offered her the role, and she accepted it. So it was kind of love at first sight when it comes to the part of Sylvia and Alanis Morissette. And she wrote a song for the movie that she performs in it as the character. So it's really fun, and I think for people who like movies like Darren Aronofsky's Requiem for a Dream, or Pi, or The Fountain, or movies like Primer, or Shane Carruth's Upstream Color, which is being self-released right now, same way we're going to do Radio Free Albemuth, I think it's a movie that for that kind of audience, and maybe also for people who are adventurous enough to see Beasts of the Southern Wild, or Mud, or some of the other terrific indie movies that are being made that aren't genre, but have a lot of the same kind of values that we think Radio Free Albemuth does.
You did mention that you've already received some, you know, critical acclaim. You got a great review in Variety. You did also win some accolades at a couple of festivals. So there have been people that have seen it in a big theater, you know, in a theater setting. What is the next step now? I mean, what are people – you want people to get into the Kickstarter campaign, and then is your goal?
At Lincoln Center in New York. We were invited to screen as part of the Indie Night series curated by producer Christine Vachon, who produced Boys Don't Cry and One Hour Photo and Velvet Goldmine, and they flew us there, and we did a Q&A for a nicely packed house. And before that, we played the Philip K. Dick Film Festival in Williamsburg, where we sold out several times for the film. We played right after the Hugo Awards at the Worldcon, which we won that film festival, which is Hugo is the big science fiction award. And at the Experience Museum Science Fiction Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. So we've gotten a lot of feedback on the film, and we've gotten a lot of enthusiasm from science fiction and Philip K. Dick and indie movie fans, and we're ready to get it out there with just a little more help from Kickstarter. We're we're about halfway there in the Kickstarter campaign, and we've got great premiums and great perks, in, you know, that Elizabeth can tell you something about.
Well,
okay,
I also want to mention,
I wanted to mention,
too, that as part of our release, because that these are our two immediate goals. One, reach, be successful on our Kickstarter goal and raise $85K, which is a is a lot of money and a huge goal. Then with that successful release, because I'm determined that we will be successful, we do want to do the limited release that John talked about it, and as much as possible make each event in the cities that we screen in a theatrical event with transmedia. We just, as a perk, a bonus reward for all backers, released a role-playing game called Left Coast, the Radio Free Albemuth Edition, that John worked with a game designer called Steve Hickey in New Zealand. He designed this game where you take on the role of a science fiction writer like Philip K. Dick and create your own web of conspiracy and intrigue with the other players. And we want to incorporate that into the theatrical screenings that we have in different towns. And we don't, yes, we're going to open in New York and Los Angeles, but we also want to hit some of the other cities where there are lots of people who love independent film and Philip K. Dick and bring it to their town.
Even though
too.
The release is the Kickstarter release is aimed for 10 cities, that's just the minimum. That's the beginning. You know, we may play for only a day in certain small towns or cities or at art museums or at, alternative kinds of venues, too. We're really open to trying to find a new way to get movies seen. The old way isn't really working. Hollywood is in a ditch. The only thing it knows how to do is make huge tentpole comic book movies. And that only leaves one other thing, which is movies with no budgets, what I call kiddies playing the piano on YouTube for 10 minutes. Everything in the middle has kind of gone away. And we're definitely a movie in the middle, and we're trying to find a way. We know there's an audience out there for it because we've started to find it at festivals and in some of these special screenings like Lincoln Center in New York. And we're gonna aggregate the community of people who like thoughtful films that are really have substance of content, have themes that resonate with them as human beings, not just thrill them and stimulate them with noise and explosions and sound and lights flashing. I mean, that's all fine, but you know, that's not the only purpose of movies. The movies I was excited about growing up were things like The Conversation and The French Connection and Francis Coppola's and William Friedkin's and Peter Bogdanovich's movies. And we see ourselves in that kind of gritty tradition of movies that are about something, Drugstore Cowboys, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, movies that make audiences think and give them something different. Dennis Hopper was the mentor of mine, and it's thanks to Dennis that I've decided to become a director when we were working on Out of the Blue. And we've made something that I think people are going to like if they get a chance to see it.
And it's interesting that you have that. I know you want to say something, Elizabeth, but it's interesting that you have that background that you said before of the distribution and the marketing, because you're obviously putting that to work along with your talent as a director to make the movie itself, because there's so much that has to be done before and after the film is made, and that's what you're up against now. What is your deadline, Elizabeth? And I know you want to say something else about the Kickstarter campaign runs until what date?
July 3rd, 11 a.m.
Okay, so it's a definite thing. So that's the cutoff. You've got to make that money by that date.
Yeah, so if you decide to donate at 11:01, we're going to be really, really irritated at you.
Right. Yeah. Yes. We've got about 15 days left, I think. So this is crunch time. We're almost at the
midpoint. And you're halfway home.
We're halfway home, but we're not home yet. What I wanted to say before is to give you an example about what this movie does to people. The Q&As at festivals often go on for a long time. In fact, the one after Worldcon went to about 3 in the morning, I think. People are excited about the ideas. And I also want to say as a producer that although, yes, we have been embraced by the Philip K. Dick community of fans and scholars who've really taken the movie to heart and appreciate its faithful adaptation, it's also been enjoyed by people who heretofore were unfamiliar with Philip K. Dick, because it's just a freaking great story.
It's science fiction, but it's like 1984, Orwell's 1984, or Huxley's Brave New World. You know, it's literature. Radio Free Albemarle is a novel that I've been reading now for, you know, close to 20 years, and it resonates every time I read it in a different way. You know, during the whole Guantanamo and during the Bush administration, it resonated in one way. And now under Obama, kind of veering a little bit back in the direction of the Bush era system, it resonates in a different way, as it did during the Arab Spring and during, before that, because of the metaphysical themes, the religious themes of the novel. I call this a spiritual movie for agnostics.
Yeah. I was going to say, this current scandal that we're in the midst of with Edward Snowden and all this idea of how much the government knows about us and watching us and all that obviously plays right into this theme.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, Philip K. Dick was a prophet and a genius, and he understood what's going on today 30 years before it was going on. Elizabeth, I think I might have interrupted you before you got a chance to talk about the Kickstarter perks.
Oh, happy to. We've got Kickstarter pledges range from $5,000 to $10,000, and $5 to $10,000, and at the lower end, it's really like somebody pre-ordering a digi download or a DVD, which helps us raise funds to release the movie. And then in between, we have private lunches with the producers, a private party at composer Ralph Grierson's house with cast and crew, Skype sessions. We have props from the movie, although pretty much, no, there's still a Scott Wilson President Fremont prop left, and also for the Ashley Greene Twilight fans, there's the shirt she wore in the movie, lovely blue shirt. And then there's also, at the high end, there is, by the way, the Alanis wardrobe and Shea Whigham wardrobe items went right away. And at the high end, we even have associate and co-executive producer credit for people who want to come on board and get that kind of bona fide credit on a well-reviewed Philip K. Dick movie that's already
finished. And a movie guaranteed
finished.
Release, because that's what we're using the funds for.
Well,
so for the right person, it's kind of an easy, yes, it is easy. You just click and pledge.
If you have the money and you want to get a movie credit, this is,
I mean,
all the risk taken out of it.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Give me what is the link? What's the easiest way to go to Kickstarter.com? There's a /Radio Albemarle, is that the...
It's not quite as easy as that. So the thing to do is to go to Kickstarter.com and then in the little search window, type in,
put in the name
Radio Free, or type in Elizabeth Carr, K-A-R-R.
And I'll be posting, and we've all posted, you know, on my website and the on my Twitter. I'll post it for folks to see.
And Amy,
you could share
the widget on your
word out, because it really is it takes a village to do something like this. In addition to a pledge, in addition to a contribution, which we love, people need to post on Facebook to say something about it, to get tweets out, to email their friends. You know, we'll be in touch with you. We'll help you compose the letters. I'm accessible on Facebook, on our Radio Free Albemarle movie page, and Elizabeth is accessible through the messaging on Kickstarter. We're living in a virtual world right now, which is something Philip K. Dick envisioned. We rarely come out of the digital realm. We appreciate your inviting us into the sunlight, so to speak, for this radio interview.
It's interesting because I was just going to say that that's the social media is really a valuable tool, and you guys are getting in the swing of how to work it and really get people out there, because that's what it's about, this grassroots notion, and that's how Kickstarter really started, I guess, right? The idea of getting the grassroots, or you call it crowdfunding, which I think is great. I don't know if that's a word you coined or somebody else coined, but the idea of getting people involved and excited about it on every level, not just giving money, but also spreading the word. obviously need the money now.
Right. We're forming a community around this movie that's a community that can do other things, too. And that's really exciting to me. Philip K. Dick understood that music in the 70s formed that kind of community, too. People, you know, who listened to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan and the other, you know, amazing groups and artists of the time. There was a real community around that music. Philip K. Dick loved music. He lived in the Berkeley area before he moved down to Southern California. He was a huge Jefferson Airplane fan and Linda Ronstadt fan. In fact, he had kind of an unhealthy crush on Linda Ronstadt, I think. The music was really important, and he understood that music was a way that the young people had community, the same way it is now in the digital realm and social media. He would have loved social media. Philip K. Dick's publisher, who's, not a young gentleman anymore, but still publishing, a guy named David Hartwell, who is his editor and close friend, came to see the movie in New York at Lincoln Center last week and loved the movie and told us how much he thought Phil himself would have liked the movie and been pleased that we captured the spirit and vision of his work. And
yeah,
that's really what we wanted to do. That was our main goal.
That must be very gratifying to hear from someone who was an intimate with him. You know.
Oh,
yeah,
that was
wonderful.
I can't tell you how wonderful that was. But that's been our experience. People like David Gill, who his website is Total Dickhead Blogspot. People who are really into Philip K. Dick are known as Total Dickheads. And throughout the, even as a, I think John screened, you screened it for David very early on as a work in progress. And to have David's approbation and love of the movie means a lot because it is a movie for those people.
We were the center of the first Philip K. Dick conference last year in San Francisco where scholars and fans from all over the world came, and including Jonathan Lethem, who was very involved with the publishing of The Exegesis, the novelist and sometimes journalist for Rolling Stone. And, you know, they love the movie, and they're behind it, which means a lot to us because you can't do this kind of thing alone, even though sometimes it feels like we've been doing it alone. You really can't, and it's great to have this kind of support behind the movie of people seeing it as a way to personally get involved and do something. I mean, Philip K. Dick understood the power of the word to change the world. He said the first thing a writer has to be is angry. He has to look out at what the world is like and want to change it. And this is a movie about changing the world. That's its theme. And we want people who feel that way to be involved too, people who don't just see movies as an anesthetic, a form of numbing themselves from the awfulness of daily life, which it sometimes can be. Nothing wrong, like I said, nothing wrong with movies as just entertainment, but there is something wrong when something as powerful as social media, as film, is just used for thrills and chills and to stimulate people's sensory apparatus rather than help them understand what's going on in their lives and make them think and make them more involved with their own life. I mean, that's the purpose of art. That's why I studied literature, and that's why I got involved with filmmaking, is I wanted I was moved by great works of literature and wanted to make great films that could do the same thing.
I hope you get the word out on this movie. You can go to the Kickstarter.com and check out Radio Free Albemuth. John Allen Simon, Elizabeth Carr, I know it's a passion project for you. I'm delighted for your success so far. I hope
and,
we help
and
you.
And also, I want to say one quick more thing. Which
yes.
It's been great to have the support of producers like Chip Rosenblum and Stephen Nemeth, who produced The Sessions, which is a really successful indie movie. They're helping us, too. And we're all out there, and we want you to join our little conspiracy to make movies that are a little different.
It is a conspiracy. And one thing I want to mention before we go, we have a real coup because we have Robin Hitchcock, who I know we're nearing the end of the call, so if you may not be familiar with him, but in an alternate reality, he's as popular as the Beatles. This incredible
I am familiar
song
with his music, yes.
Oh, cool.
Yes,
So
he co-composed the score with Ralph Grierson and contributed 10 songs, and I love his music. That's thanks to Elizabeth helping us get him on board. And I've been a fan of his for many, many years.
And the Good Listeners, which is a very cool indie band. They play the song that gets the message out. And what I love about this movie is ultimately its message is hope. Because I really do think an individual can make a difference. That's my personal belief in the world and in their own life. It all comes down to one person. And that's really what the message of this movie is. Wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, it's the, as Philip K. Dick says, one of the characters says, it's an ancient battle, the rights of the individual against the supremacy of the state, and it's never been more important than today that we find that balance and that the individual maintains his dignity and his integrity and his conscience. And look, this was a passion project. None of the producers or I as director, writer, took fees, and we're out there to have made something we're proud of, and we want folks to see it, and we think they'll like it if they do.
We can tell that you're very passionate about it. I wish you the best. It sounds like a very important movie. I hope we get enough of a release so people will see it, and certainly you'll get a DVD release eventually. So that's the beauty of the way that it is now in the world.
Beth, you can pre-order a DVD right now on Kickstarter for $50, limited edition.
There you go. Listen, I
wish
you the best.
Please get the movie out. There's a lot of great perks from $5 to $10,000, and we're appreciative of every contribution, and even more so of people who engage to get their friends to know about the movie.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
just as important as the contribution.
Right. We'll do what we can for you on this end, and I wish you the best, and I hope you come back and see us once it's
Amy,
up and running.
We love you.
Fully.
We'll be happy to come back.
Yeah.
Thank you so
we'll
much.
Camp out with
John
you,
Allen
Amy.
Simon.
Thank you.
Thank you, John Allen Simon, Elizabeth Carr, the director and producer, respectively, of Radio Free Albemuth. Stick around, 347-857-4505 is the number to get you into the show.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. I'm in Georgia nut, mounds don't. I'm in Georgia real milk chocolate, coconut and munchy nuts too. Mounds got deep dark chocolate and chewy coconut. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. Peter Paul, I'm in Georgia nut, Peter Paul, mounds don't.
Because
sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
Welcome back. It is the AP Beth Arkley Show here on BTR, and unfortunately, whether you love it or not, you need money, and certainly the folks at Radio Free Albemuth need the money to get their campaign fully off the ground. So check it out. Go to Kickstarter.com, click in Radio Free Albemuth, and I'll post the links on my Twitter account and also on the blog over at the website a bit later on as well. Hey, 347-857-4505 is the number to call if you want to get into the pop culture free flow convo. Hi there, welcome to the show.
Hi there. I just don't understand. Did they film this already and they're just looking for money?
Yes, they've made the movie, actually, because a lot of times what people will do with Kickstarter is they just raise the money to actually make the movie, but they actually finance the movie themselves through various investors and their own money. They've made the movie, but they're now getting money together to get a distribution in theaters because that takes an additional bucket load of money, if you know what I mean.
You know? I would think so. I just didn't,
so, yeah,
I didn't get that because I kind of tuned in a little later than I wanted to.
Yeah, but, so they do. The movie is made, and apparently it has been seen. I haven't seen it myself, but it has been seen in a couple of festivals and different places. And
oh, so they're looking for now to distribute it more, you know,
right,
widely.
To distribute. So a more wider distribution, and then
right,
eventually it will be a digital and, you know, DVD download and available for people to watch it, you know. Yeah, that's really what film has relied upon, especially the indie films, is the DVD market, because they
right, well,
a lot
they
of
have to, yes.
Yeah, they don't get a big wide release, so they wind up having to go that route. And even though it's not quite the same as watching it on the big screen in the theater, let's face it, it is certainly better than missing it altogether.
I have to agree. I think that there are some that, you know, that I've seen that are worthwhile seeing, and it would be too bad to miss.
Yeah. Well, this one sounds exciting. If you're a sci-fi fan or intellectual sci-fi fan, it's not like the crazy, you know, aliens and monsters and whatever,
right,
that kind of thing. It really is more of a intellectual level and really talks about Philip K. Dick was really talking about perception and reality and government control and those kinds of things. So almost George Orwellian in some ways.
Well, that sounds sounds very interesting. I look forward to seeing it.
It sounds fascinating, yes.
I would like to know what you're going to have on Friday.
Oh, Friday we have an interesting character, a gentleman named Davis Zhu Wei. He is the author of a satirical spiritual book called it's actually a series. The first one is The Misadventures of Sister Mary Olga Fortitude. She is a chain-smoking, bourbon-drinking nun.
Oh, the second
one apparently was just released called Babes in Bucksnort, because apparently that's the town or the convent. I don't know. I haven't read it yet either. So when I read it, I can tell you my critique. But if I haven't read it, I can just tell you what I've heard. It sounds fascinating. Apparently, he takes a view of spirituality and satire and kind of the healing power of humor. His background is in social work, and I think he brings a lot of that to the fore. So he could be a very interesting character. We'll see what happens.
Well, he must be very humorous with those titles, that's for sure.
Yeah, those
I think that sounds like fun, but I'll be listening. That's at 1 o'clock, correct?
Friday
at
1, that's right.
Okay.
And, yes. All right,
terrific.
I appreciate
the meantime,
call.
Have a great week.
Yes, you too.
Thank you.
And stay
bye.
Cool. Wherever you are, stay cool and dry, as they say.
I'll try. You too. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, appreciate the call. A couple minutes left, 347-857-4505 gets you into the mix. We have a little technical difficulties here. Okay. Never mind. Thanks to the crowd at TCS, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. We work this together with occasionally a glitch here and there, but not too much. Hey, I do want to mention that today we kick off the Dead Silent blog tour. I have a very intriguing interview up running on A Blue Million Books. It's also available at the website amybetharkowee.com. That is the place, by the way, to follow me everywhere you go. I don't need Edward Snowden to tell me that people are following me. I know they're following me. But you can follow me there. I'm also on Twitter at AD Writes. You can look me up on Facebook. Follow the show at Blog Talk Radio. I don't know. You got to have something better to do with your time than follow me, but I'm always happy to see you. And I will respond, of course. We're also looking for loquacious free thinkers who'd like to dish politics and the hot topics of the day, TV, movies, etc., for our expanding Coffee Clatch edition. So if you want to get into the mix, tell us. Tell us about it, because we're always looking to expand the show. We can't do it without you. We have lots of interesting folks coming up in the next several weeks. So get involved with the show any way you can. Hey, by the way, this weekend, as I said, I did see, speaking of movies, Before Midnight, the latest Richard Linklater, I guess it's the last one, they're wrapping up the trilogy, so I heard, of the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and now Before Midnight with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. I will say, yeah, looked to watch a few times, a little draggy. It's not a movie also that you want to go see with an FOB, and if you read the Eliza Gordon miniseries, you know that Eliza is dating one such character, FOB, shorthand for funny old bachelor, in the good ship dishy police chief Tom Santini. I may or may not be involved with somebody like that, and it's not the kind of person you want to go see this movie with, because it really is about these two people who met, had a love affair, they're staying together all these years, and you know, the strife, the toll that I guess 15, 18 years of marriage, or I don't know if they're married legally, but are together and have children, that you have to, you can encounter and brush up against. So it's an intriguing movie. I mean, it's worth seeing. It's certainly for those of us who don't like, who eschew the big summer blockbusters. Speaking of blockbusters, those are not my kind of movies. I'm much more on the indie front myself, so it's hard to find those movies during the summer in the big multiplex theaters, for sure. Anyway, so it's worth seeing. I would say it's worth seeing. So check out the check it out if you're so inclined. And I don't know what else, what other movie I may see this summer, but we'll see. There are a few. There are some good ones out there. It's just they don't always get the distribution, as we were just talking about with our guests. And again, I want to thank Philip, John Allen Simon and Elizabeth Carr, the director and producer, respectively, of Philip K. Dick's adaptation of the Philip K. Dick novel, Radio Free Albemuth. That sounds like a fascinating endeavor. It has been done. Again, we're looking for money for the distribution. And they're at, let me see, I have it up here, the page so far. They are at, they have 457 backers so far. They have pledged $40,808. They have 16 days to go. They need to make $85,000. And the way Kickstarter works, it's merciless. You have to make all of it, which doesn't seem fair, right? You should be able to make whatever. So if they don't make the 85, they make nothing. All or nothing, so please help them over the top. We'll post the details on Twitter, et cetera, and help spread the word, because that's kind of the way things work now. You've got to spread the word. And that helps. Hey, also in the news today, I noticed, I didn't realize they still do this. They have the Miss USA contest, or Miss USA pageant. It was on last night, apparently. And Miss Utah had a little problem answering a question posed to her by reality show star and judge Nene Leakes, who posed a question about women earning less than being the big winner, the big earners in their families, but still earning less than men. And this poor young woman stumbled her way through a very awkward answer about the importance of education. Apparently, she had pre-planned an answer about education, so no matter what you asked her, that would be the answer. And she had to try to frame it, and it didn't work too well. So she flubbed her way to third place. So she didn't hurt her that much. She made it to third place. I didn't know they were still televising these pageants, but I guess they are. And they also had last night, and I didn't only saw this in reruns because I woke up in the middle of the night and I flipped around, and there it was, an HLN, the Daytime Emmy Awards, in prime time in the middle of the night. So you can imagine the experience I had. It was the worst show I've ever seen. It was a very low-budget affair, I guess. They threw it together. They had all kinds of technical problems. They couldn't get the audio working half the time. They had a Lifetime Achievement Award to present to Monty Hall, who, God bless this man, at 92, looks fabulous and sounds fabulous. But they had a whole video montage package put together that they couldn't play. They couldn't find it or it didn't work. And that was a shame. Wayne Brady was fortunately a consummate professional, managed to do the tribute and ad lib, and he did a great job. But still, this man you're paying tribute to, who is a groundbreaker in the game show world, doesn't get a tribute. It doesn't make sense. Then they had, inexplicably, after the people made their acceptance speeches, they lured everybody over to this couch, this hideous red couch in the middle of the stage, where, of all people, for whatever reason, Giada De Laurentiis was sitting, with a big smile on her face, to ask them, how does it feel to win, basically? And they stumbled to the answers there. It was awkward. It was tacky. I don't get it. I mean, I know soap operas are on their last legs, but do you have to really, you know, cut them off at the knees, so to speak? Not a good job. Very shabbily handled, I think. I mean, I only saw a small snippet of it, but what I saw was a disaster. But anyway, congratulations to the winners. I'm sure they deserved a better show than that. Speaking of soap operas, see, this is my segue. Don't forget Eliza Gordon, who is my heroine in the mystery series as a former soap star turned soup aficionado and amateur sleuth. The latest book is Dead Silent, available at the website via Kindle or paperback from Cozy Cat Press. Get your copy today, and I'm so appreciative of already getting great feedback from readers. And we have the blog tour starting today with a lovely interview on a Blue Million book. So read the interview, and you'll find out more about the book there as well. The details are all on the infamous website that I'm always telling you about, AmyBethArgui.com. I'm sick of hawking myself, but I guess we do what we have to do, as they say. And I do appreciate I appreciate the support, as they say. I'm going to see you on Friday. Don't forget, it's Davis Ajoui. I'm going to have to work on that name. And the Sister Mary Ogle for Sister Mary Olga Fortitude Adventures. That's coming up. Whatever you do, wherever you go this week, do drive safe, play nice, dream big. We'll talk next time on the Amy Beth Arcoe Show.
Orange and yellow and purple and green. The lights of the city at night set me free. Stumble through the bars on Forget Me Not Lane. Sparkle through the glitter, but don't show the pain. Hold the world underneath the golden palm tree. Hold the world. Come to the party, the things are lonely. For free. Heartbeats echo through Camelot. Come to the tavern, I'll meet you up above. Soaring to the heavens, what a fabulous ride. But everybody's heading for the same place to hide in. Hollywood, underneath the golden palm tree. Hollywood.
Bye. everybody else is overwhelmed by indifference and the promise of an early bed. You either shut up or get cut out. They don't want to hear about it. It's only inches on the real to real. And the radio is in the hands of such a lot of fools trying to anesthetize the way that you feel. Radio is the sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. Say you better listen to the voice of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think